Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you The Catholic Doctors, discussing medicine in light of church teaching. And now, The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek.
Welcome to The Catholic Doctors Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. This is your co-host in studio with Dr. Will Turek, and on the phone we have Dr. Anthony Caruso. This is our monthly show with the extra doctor.
A little round table discussion.
It is.
Yeah, round today.
Yeah.
we're missing our fourth. Dr. Ashley Fernandez is
not with us.
He's got a sick kid at home.
Yeah, and, great thing for a pediatrician.
No kidding. Well, our wishes and prayers go out to him.
Yes, indeed.
And hope that his family gets back up and running.
Well, I think we have a good topic for all of us to sink our teeth into today. On April the 14th. On the show Lean Forward, Lean Forward on MSNBC, their host, Melissa Harris Perry, was in a conversation with a doctor from Columbia University and flat out came out and said that residency programs should be forced to go through abortion training.
Medical students as well.
Yeah.
They want this as a curricular issue.
Right. And this is something, Tony, you and I have seen. We've seen this for a long time, especially with the residency programs.
Mm-hmm.
This problem has been going on actually since the mid-90s. And the American or the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education at that time came out with a statement that basically said that no program or resident with religious or moral objections shall be required to provide training in or to perform induced abortions, but that all programs should have at least access to training for abortion services and family planning services, even if they are a religiously affiliated residency program.
Well said.
Right. And is this just a... I think what we're seeing now is a rehashing of all of this, but now we've got the Affordable Care Act behind this that is taking away religious exemptions left and right for insurance carriers and providing for oral contraceptives and pills and everything else. Is this just another way to break down moral and religious objections to performing abortion?
No, it's just the next step. I think you know, you have the first step is codifying it, and the next way is trying to find ways around the obstruction, and the third way is implementation. So basically, you put this in place, you say, okay, you just have to have access. And, you know, Mike, I think you can probably agree with me, and maybe even you will from your medical school experience. When you went to medical school, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, there really weren't that many people in there that were training in abortion.
No, not at all.
There were no family planning divisions of OBGYN departments. There were no abortion clinics on the campus of most medical schools, if any.
Right. Right,
and I think it just about the time, like I finished in '95, that just about that time, these things were beginning to come in.
Yeah,
and I think it was about that time that the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology actually put out a survey asking about their members' preferences on abortions, and the majority of them were against abortion.
Right,
and the majority of them were, only for abortion for reasons of incest or rape or some other, medical reason, but the vast majority of their members were against abortion.
Right. And in response, the American College of OBGYN a few years later put out another statement that basically said that if you don't do abortions, you have to be able to find someone who will for a patient who asks.
Right. That came out later on, I think, around 2004 or 5. I think in response to that, I think George Bush put in the HHS protections for conscious at that time.
But
that's
which
what
he did
taken
at that
care
time,
of since then.
But,
yeah, it's been gone for now.
But that's the law is in Canada.
Right.
I mean, if you can't provide that, or is it Australia or Canada? Australia for sure. That if you can't provide an abortion, then you must find a provider who will do it.
Right.
And the thing is, as you were talking, Tony, I was brought back to my memory when I was a third year medical student. I remember getting dragged in, basically. Hey, scrub in on this case. You know? Oh, okay, sure. It was a surgeon. It was a non-believer. He wasn't a Catholic. He wasn't a Christian, as far as I could tell. And we did this end of the, it was, you know, 6, 7, 8 o'clock, right as everybody was just trying to wrap up and go home. And very clearly it was billed as a DNC, but I couldn't prove that that there wasn't a viable pregnancy in there.
No. And well, as a third year medical student, you really wouldn't have any opportunity to know that, though.
No. I reviewed the chart, and certainly they would cover their tracks. Mm-hmm. This was in a situation where I could really effectively evaluate what was going on, but I had a very eerie feeling in the pit of my stomach that something was not right about this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just sort of done on the sly. They got the circulator nurse, they got everybody together, and they ran it together and ran it right out as soon as possible, I guess. And I found that I didn't know why I felt so unsettled about it, but it was really bothersome to me that this was perpetrated on this woman and on me and the other house staff. Mm-hmm. You know, and
when I was an intern in a county hospital, we were made to not do the abortion, but they would put in laminaria the night before. And we had to make sure the laminaria was still in place.
Right.
And you didn't cover it until you were like a second year.
I hate to interrupt, but laminaria, explain what that is.
Oh, laminaria is essentially wound seaweed. And so it's designed to absorb the secretions or the fluid that's present in the tissue and swell.
So it's put in intravaginally, put into the cervix, so that we can open things up and perform the procedure later.
Right, and they wouldn't necessarily do. It was one of the reasons I left that place, but they wouldn't necessarily do a suction. They would do saline. They would mm-hmm. do other uterotonics. They would do partial birth. I guess they would do all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that was the first exposure I ever really had to any kind of a family planning service. One doctor that would apply it, and there weren't that many people that really took advantage of it either. And most of the residents would refuse to do it with her.
So this is the interesting thing I find about this. Okay, you two are a little bit ahead of me before I received my medical education. A few years
way ahead of you.
Way ahead of you. That's true. and so this has been a concerted effort, it seems, from the pro-death crowd to slowly implement this. I mean, as we were going through, there was, you know, this option for opting out and trying to, you know, accommodate those who wanted it, but those who did not want it could recuse themselves. And then now we get to Dr. Regina Benjamin, who was the first Surgeon General that President Obama appointed in his first term. And in 1996, she made statements to the effect of, as I believe a member of the Board of Trustees of the AMA, that all curricula in state-run medical schools should include abortion and require it of their medical students to learn.
Right.
And so
I think this is where it comes down to. There's just not enough abortion providers.
Right.
Right.
Why?
And let's not finish with Regina Benjamin. I
don't want to finish with her. I'd like to take her on, but you know, go ahead. I mean, she's you got to hear what she got.
Well, I mean, she received, you know, she had this job. She's a Roman Catholic. She still to this day is a Roman Catholic.
Uh-huh. And on the board of the Catholic Health Association.
Right.
Sister Carol Keehan, who's the president of the Catholic Health Association, was when there was some question about her Catholicity, she came to her defense and said, no, 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 no. Dr. Benjamin is in favor of reducing abortions. Dr. Benjamin does not want more abortions. But we all know that is euphemistic language for we want more family planning. We don't want, we prefer not surgical, to eliminate surgical abortions, but we want family planning. That was the euphemistic language that Sister Keehan mentioned. So.
Right. Well, I remember that it's been a very, very big thing in the pro-choice crowd to make abortion safe, legal, and rare.
Right, right.
Right? Safe, legal, and rare. And we know lately from the different reports that are coming out that while the only thing it is really legal.
Right.
Right.
It's not safe and it's not rare.
It's not safe and it's certainly not rare.
And according to this physician that this MSNBC commentator had on the air, I watched the video. She said, no, this is one in three women in the United States has had an abortion. And so that doesn't sound to me to be rare.
No, it's not.
Well, it's not rare.
Right.
But it's... She also made it sound to be that it's a very common thing to do. Well, no, 67% of women don't.
Right.
You know,
right.
Precisely.
And exactly. And of the 30% that they do, more than half of them regret it almost immediately.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, they and the vast majority, and I know from, you know, the work that I do on the other side, is most of these people don't even know any other options.
Right.
And now we're going to train doctors to not... Either tell them options. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're going to say, "Oh, we can just get rid of this and it'll be fine."
Well, I think it goes. But a lot of this is striking me just as, you know, it doesn't just start with medical students in medical school. It starts with the medical school applicants.
Right.
We've seen several occasions here locally where good pro-life medical students are kind of screened out of the program.
Right.
So now you've got more pro-choice students who are within the program, even though they may be Catholic or not Catholic. And so now you're skewing the medical training towards a pro-choice movement. And now you get statements like this from, you know, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology that says, you know, most students who participate in clinical abortion education find it valuable and recommend that be an integrated part of training. Well, the people that are taking this training are pro-choice to start with.
Right.
You know, because they're elective.
I've made this comment in this before. I mean, we have to understand that the value of medical students for the vast majority of medical students is not the same as the value that we espouse here.
No, not at all.
They take away the art, they put in the science, and with the science, to become depersonalized.
Right.
And everything is just okay.
You know, but the ones that get through, and this is something that Dr. Fernandez and I talked about earlier today, is the ones that do get through and do have faith and do believe in the values that we uphold here are the ones that we're going to have on the show here in the future. Coming up in the next couple of months, we're going to get a collection of questions from medical students from The Ohio State University. And we are going to plan on having them on and grilling us on some of these very issues.
Well, don't just leave it with the ones that have changed.
No.
Let's change somebody.
We'll bring the ones that haven't in.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, because I think what has gotten lost in there is the true value of life.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
We almost seem to teach our medical students that they should and could act as God.
Yeah.
You know, because they can pretty much cure everything accordingly, and if they don't, then they can pretty much just off it and start over.
That's right.
You know, and honestly, the problem is you said it yourself. You know, you every time you kind of throw whether they're Catholic or not, they're pro-choice and they're Catholic or they're not, and I'm like, okay, and in my mind, I go, in my heart, I go, well, if you're pro-choice, you're not Catholic.
Yeah.
How can you possibly espouse, really, when, and I'll even go to your evangelicals who are really great pro-life people, because they'll get this, right? When did Jesus ever say it was okay to kill something?
Yeah.
Never.
Other than himself, never.
Exactly.
But that was a different right?
He had to do that.
He did say, I did not come to bring peace, but the sword. But I don't think that's exactly what he meant.
No, I don't think he meant, but he meant this. I mean, I'm sure that Christ back then and God knew that this might happen if he let us have free will.
Absolutely. He knows the heart of man.
And we've had similar but not the same type of Holocaust all through history.
Right.
But this one is the most insidious and worst one. This is the one that will take down the entire Congress. I mean, look, you've got the only Democrat-announced person for president in 2016 last Saturday saying that we have to not only make everything safe and legal, but we have to take people of religious faith and change them.
That's just really sickened me.
Well, comrades, you're listening to the Catholic Doctor Show on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. Remember, you can hear our show on Wednesdays at noon and Sundays at 2:30 here in our listening area. You can also like us on Facebook, the Catholic Doctors page of Facebook, and Twitter, at Catholic Doctors is our Twitter feed there. We're talking with Dr. Tony Caruso about, should residents or medical students be forced to go through abortion training and education during their training, even though they may have religious and moral objections to doing it? And I guess the point I find very interesting about all this is, if you look at the statistical data on abortions from the Guttmacher Institute, the number of abortions in the United States has been steadily declining over the year, and we've kind of reached a peak of the number of abortions being performed every year, about 1.2, 1.3 million abortions a year, which is a tragedy.
No, yeah, and that's surgical abortions.
That's surgical abortion. But so if that's the case, where we've kind of peaked at the number of total surgical abortions being performed,
yeah,
and there are enough providers to do those, why do we need to train more? They say that they need increased access so that we can have safe abortion services as a key component of women's health care. I don't find it to be health or care.
Well, I made that point about surgical because the slowly growing part right. that's making up for some of that downside is the use of medical abortion.
Yeah, we talked about that on our show last week.
We did.
And that's becoming more of a silent abortion industry where the faces are not known, the industry, the centers are not known. You can't go and pick at these places. They're being done in family practice offices, a gynecologist office. Nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, a number of people can do those. So abortions are being done, and now they're getting even more secret than before.
You know, mm-hmm. what concerns me is the proliferation of all these minute clinics and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, now, if you really want to get down and dirty, what would happen if, you know, I mean, I'm sure this is the dream of what's-her-face, Cecile Richards, to have those minute clinics doing stuff like this, chemical abortions, you know. That would be really, really unbelievably evil.
Well, I mean, it would be. Not that what's going on right now isn't, guys. I mean, think about it. It's not just – remember, this is being done, and I can't tell you how many, but I know it's at least one. This has actually been done in places to call themselves Catholic.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That goes without saying, unfortunately, because we know folks in different parts of this country that tell us that their Catholic hospitals are not Catholic. They're not abiding by the ethical and religious directives. They're not stopping their residencies from teaching this. And so, therefore, they're going out. Their family practice and OBGYNs are doing this. Their residents are doing this on a regular basis.
Right. And to find a residency in OBGYN, especially, that is not going to push this agenda is getting increasingly difficult. As a matter of fact, it takes the residents entering the program to band together, if some magic group of people come together all pro-life, to push the program more in a pro-life direction.
Right. That's right. That's absolutely correct.
I mean, that happened in Peoria, in Illinois. It happened in Buffalo. But the problem is, how long will that be pushed? How long will that be able to be pushed?
Or how it
snaps back?
Or how long will it take for the Council on Graduate Medical Education accreditation to pull their accreditation?
Yeah.
Right. You know, well, at least put them on probation.
Or put them on probation, correct. Yeah. All right. So, Dr. Turk, Dr. Caruso, give me the counter argument. Why shouldn't they all be trained?
Oh, well, that's we talked about this before the show. There are countless articles of medical students who have gone in with a pro-choice bent. They've done a rotation with an abortion provider. They've gone through many procedures, and they've walked out of that rotation and said, I will never, ever take another life in the name of women's reproductive health. The internet is replete with many, many countless testimonies of medical students who have said just that.
So it could backfire on them.
And if this happens, I guarantee you, you're going to have lots and lots of medical students writing just these same kind of articles all over the country.
Well, I hope so. I mean, but you see, I still also see people, and I don't mean to kind of throw water on this, because I see the same thing in some of the students I used to teach, but I'll tell you, there are people who want to do OBGYN who are scared. They're scared of their rotations. They're scared to even take the plunge and go into a residency because they have no idea how it's going to change on the other side.
Oh, yeah. Right. There's plenty of them that avoid. I mean, I was in a very pro OBGYN family practice residency where, and you know this residency down in SIU in Carbondale.
Right.
You know, many of the residents who walk out of there can apply for privileges in remote areas to do sections, C-sections. Mm-hmm. We were certified to attend all the meconium deliveries and all the high risk deliveries. We had a level 2 nursery in our hospital, which is the biggest hospital within 150 miles of anything. We sent everything right. that was overflow to Cardinal Glennon. So we were a very qualified hospital, and lots of people did lots of OB coming out of my residency. And let me tell you, it scared the pants off of me because I went in and I thought as a believing Catholic, even then, although not quite as believing as I maybe today, I said, this is scaring the heck out of me. I don't know if I can do this because I somehow had this creeping feeling that I was going to have to do things that I couldn't abide by.
Well, the thing is though, let's say, for example, we all draw a line in the sand and we say, all right, we're just not going to do this. You know, I don't care what they say. We're not going to, you know, do this. And we're going to encourage medical students to go into residencies and residents not to do this. Well, what happens next when the certifying bodies of the American Board of Family Practice, American Board of OBGYN come and say, oh, now you have to demonstrate in order to be certified how many abortions you've done in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Or I think it's going to get even worse, Tony. I think it's going to come down to your licensure. You're either going to have to provide, refer, or, you know, somehow be involved in the services for you to get licensure within the state that you're practicing in.
Yeah.
That's my biggest fear.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But before that, I think they're going to go after all the... they're going to make it so hot in the kitchen that unless you're willing to kind of give in, your only option is to find an alternative career.
Well, and that's sad to say, but Tony, we talked about this a little bit earlier. What are can these people get this type of training without having to do abortions?
What kind of training?
You know, like how to do a suction DNC?
Sure, they can. Or something like that. We all did. We all got trained in hysterotomy is a C-section.
Right.
There's no magic about it.
Right. So that's an opening of the uterus for some abortions. Right. We can do DNCs. We can do them with suction catheters. We can do them with curettes because women bleed or people have miscarriages. We learned about Cytotec and we learned about. But about even mifepristone,
which are chemical used for chemical abortions.
We turned about ectopic pregnancy,
right?
And all those things in another field, if you turn it upside down, are all abortions.
That's right, and so it doesn't take you don't have to be involved in abortions directly in order to be able to learn the tools of the trade to do an abortion. This is part and parcel to OBGYN as well as a lot of family practice programs. They teach this stuff. It's not, you know. So what's so magical about MSNBC's commentator, or what's so magical about Dr. Regina Benjamin saying that we need this as a curricular component? What is it?
Well, I don't think most of us of a certain age who were learning those different techniques were taught how to do D&Es,
right.
Which is actually pulling the baby out piece by piece.
Right.
Right? But, I mean, I didn't do that. Did you do that, Mike?
No, absolutely not.
I actually saw one when I was in academic medicine, and I don't know how anybody does that and then doesn't go off and be like Judas. That's just the most harrowing thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Right. Well, I had to do something like that on a 15-weeker who just wouldn't pass it on her own, and no matter what we did, and it just sickened me, and I don't think I could ever do it. But I think I think what we need to do is, one, we need to pray for these Catholic medical students who are considering going into OBGYN.
Yeah.
And to let them know that there are doctors like us and others out there who are more than willing to support them in their decisions to be OBGYNs and not go through this type of training.
I agree.
I think we also have to call to this other side to be tolerant of those people of faith who don't desire to be involved in the culture of death.
That we have to call them on the tolerance issue. I mean, because they call for tolerance from us. We need to demand tolerance of our beliefs.
Right.
Right. I mean, and it's the only thing that's going to make anything change. And the other thing is that the people who are doing this in quiet, because I believe there are doctors who are believing in the culture of life and following the culture of life and just trying to take care of their little practice and take care of their family. It's unfortunate, and I'm sorry, but if you're a person who is in that number, you must be counted.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, now we are counting people because you're one of a dwindling number.
You're not a non-combatant anymore.
Right. You cannot be anymore. I mean, I've watched the roles of the AAPLOG, which is the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, shrink in the last 3 years.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Well, Tony,
and I don't know that that's because people just don't want to be counted or they're afraid to be a member, right, or if there really are people that are just going to the other side. But
right. Well, or just forgot to send in their dues like me.
Yeah, okay, fine.
All right, Tony, we got to say goodbye.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
But I think it's really important that we do that and we let these medical students know that we who are in this side, we who have gone through, lived the battle, and have come on the other side, a bigger believer, will be there to support them.
Right. Well, we're going to have to go, Tony. So we're going to have to do this next month.
Oh, no.
All right.
Next month, the medical students.
Okay. You've been listening to the Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. Until next week, we hope your week is happy, healthy, and holy.
God bless.
The Catholic Doctors is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of the Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek are available at stgabrielradio.com. Veni Sancti.